You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-fits-all branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's clothing that bolsters your brand identity and creates a unique connection between your brand, your employees, and your customers. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a supplier of branded apparel to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help you and your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action. From logo application to online ordering, Lands' End Outfitters offers seamless solutions that give you peace of mind, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code POD20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code POD20 for 20% off your first product.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, as the war in Ukraine nears its 3-year anniversary, the United States has made headlines by allowing Ukraine to fire its long-range missiles into Russia. Joining me now to explain the major shift in strategy is Professor Andrew Cotty, the EU Jean Monnet Chair of European Political Integration in the Department of Government and Politics at University College Cork. Andrew, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, why did Biden decide to change policy at this late stage in his presidency?
Well, I think it seems to be two things. One is the North Korean angle. So as listeners are probably aware, North Korea has now sent troops to Russia, and there's talks of about 10,000 North Korean troops helping the Russians in the Kursk region. So it seems to be that it may be a pushback against that. But I think the bigger factor is really the outcome of the US presidential election. As is well known, obviously, President Trump is not a friend of Ukrainians, if you put it like that. And I think probably President Biden wants to do all he can to support Ukraine in the last couple of months that he has.
So the particular attack by Russia on Ukraine over the weekend, targeting the electricity infrastructure, that was not necessarily the trigger.
I doubt it, because I think, you know, the Biden administration has been considering this for some weeks now. So I think it's unlikely that a single event like that would trigger the decision. But I think it's worth noting that, though, because, of course, one of the arguments is that the Ukrainians have been forced to effectively fight with one hand behind their back, that Russia has been able to target Ukraine with these missile and airstrikes, and Ukraine hasn't been able to fight back. So now, to some extent, the US is giving the Ukrainians the ability to fight back, if we put it like that.
Now, the question of whether or not this will persuade the Russians to de-escalate, given this escalation permitted by the United States to Ukraine, Putin, all he's got to do is kind of hang on for 2 months, then Trump is in power and he expects that the Trump administration will emasculate Zelensky.
I think that's right. I mean, from the Russian leadership's perspective, Russia's situation in the war is better than Ukraine's right now. And as you say, I think the hope for the Russians is that they can hang on. I mean, the other thing to note is that this is an important decision in terms of these ATACMS missiles, as they're known, being the Ukrainians to be able to target Ukraine. But it's probably not a complete game changer in terms of the war. So it'll help the Ukrainians, but it probably won't shift the balance completely, I think.
Now, the Ukrainians have always said they would not be targeting civilian infrastructure or civilian buildings. They will be targeting the air bases from which missiles and aircraft are launched to attack Ukraine. But the temptation will be there to try and bring home to the Russian people exactly what Putin is doing to them.
I think that's true, but I also think it's pretty unlikely that the Ukrainians would target, you know, towns, villages and so on, because the implications would be very negative in terms of, you know, the perspectives on Ukraine in the US and in the West. I mean, in addition, although all of this isn't made public, we do know that there are agreements between Ukraine and the US and its various partners in terms of exact conditions under which these weapons can be used. So I do think it's pretty unlikely that Ukraine will be using these weapons to target civilian targets in Russia.
At the question of the North Koreans and their involvement on the front line, I was reading a report over the weekend that suggested that a defector had indicated that many of these North Koreans would run away, basically, as soon as they had the opportunity to escape, not just from the conflict, but effectively from North Korea, they would do so.
That would certainly seem to be a possibility. I mean, as observers have pointed out, North Korea is like a giant prison camp in a sense. It's not a nice place to live and hasn't been for many decades. So I think certainly it is certainly possible that many...
Today we have two very special guests on our program, introducing Lem and Lime.
Hello!
For Starry Lemon Lime Soda.
Thanks for having us.
What is Starry Lemon Lime Soda?
It's a crisp, clear burst of lemon lime flavor, and it's caffeine-free.
Between us, one of you must be a little more important to Starry than the other. Who is it?
We're both important.
So we could just as easily be Starry Lime Lemon Soda.
No, that doesn't sound right.
Ooh, I like it.
So you saying hip-hop could be hop-hip?
Works for me.
Starry Lemon Lime Soda. Starry hits different.
Korean soldiers could decide to defect. So how effective they would be as a fighting force, I think, is a bit of an unknown quantity. It's a long time, of course. I mean, the Korean War was now 70-odd years ago, and North Korea hasn't actually fought a war since then. So we don't know how well the North Korean troops would perform. I mean, you know, there is some suggestion that these could be crack elite troops, but that's not clear. And I think it is possible that the impact of the North Korean forces could be less, perhaps, than the Russians might hope.
And the idea of North Korea volunteering its best troops, given that the parlous situation that it's permanently in with South Korea and other potential enemies in its own region, it probably doesn't want to sacrifice those lives.
That would seem sensible. I mean, the other thing which there have been reports is, of course, that, you know, soldiers which are sent to Ukraine would also know that, for instance, if they were to defect, you know, there could be very negative repercussions for their families back in North Korea. So the North Korean government and the North Korean military probably has a certain degree of leverage over the soldiers. I mean, there have been reports, for instance, that if soldiers defected or ran away on the battlefield, that they could find their family members being shot back in North Korea. Now, again, we don't know if that's true, but given the nature of the North Korean regime, it's not inconceivable.
And these troops from North Korea, we wonder how they're being paid. I mean, are they being paid the minimal wage they would be paid in North Korea, or are they getting a ruble bonus when they fight for Russia?
Again, that we don't know, but it seems quite likely that might be the case. You know, that would be a rather cheap cost from the Russian perspective to give them an additional bonus. So that perhaps might incentivize them as well.
Now, the question of how this might be a game changer, you're suggesting that Zelensky firing some missiles deep into Russia, hitting military or industrial targets, it really won't make much odds in terms of what happens when Trump comes to power.
I think so. I mean, Trump, I think, really is the bigger question. And there's actually a lot of uncertainty. I mean, obviously, as we know, Mr. Trump has said that he'll resolve the conflict on day one. We know that he's not been sympathetic to Ukraine. He and incoming Vice President J.D. Vance have said that they want to cut off the assistance to Ukraine. But that doesn't necessarily get one to a peace deal. So the gap between what Russia would be willing to concede and what Ukraine would be willing to concede is still very large. So what happens if there's no peace deal? What then does President Trump do? So that there's a good deal of uncertainty about how this will play out once President Trump comes to power in January. Some are suggesting, and I'm not sure this is necessarily right, but it's worth thinking about, that President Trump actually might, you know, threaten the Russians and say to Russia, you have to stop this war, otherwise I'm going to give more to the Ukrainians. So there really is a good deal of uncertainty about how this will play out once President Trump comes to office in January.
Now, Donald Trump Jr. has been tweeting, saying that the military-industrial complex wants the war to escalate before his dad becomes president, and he's talking about trillions of money being spent. But the military-industrial complex, I don't know which way they vote, or are they... neutral in terms of their politics, but presumably they want the war to continue, and they will be lobbying the Trump administration not to cut back because they want to keep making the big bucks.
Well, that's possible, but I think also if you think about it, even if the war ends, the chances are that Ukraine is going to continue to need to be armed, because Ukraine is going to be very concerned about the possibility of another Russian attack in a year, 2 years, five years' time. So I'm not convinced that the military-industrial complex has that kind of decisive influence. That's not to say that it's not a factor in all of this, but even if the war ends, I think, you know, Ukraine will continue to buy arms in pretty significant quantities and want assistance from the US and Europe. I mean, the other thing I think is, you know, one way I think about the Republican Party at the moment is that they're what's sometimes described as chicken hawk syndrome, which on the one hand is that they're very hawkish. On the other hand, they're rather anti-war. And so there's quite a large tension really within the Republican side in the US political spectrum in their attitudes to war and military conflict at the moment. And how that will play out is a big unknown factor in the second Trump presidency.
Now, the war will end, and the question is under what terms? Although when I say wars will end, in theory, North Korea and South Korea are still at war. I mean, it's a bizarre situation. But this war will end, one presumes. And the question is the conditions of the peace. If Ukraine has to forfeit territory, the other side of the bargain might be that they are welcomed rapidly into NATO, which would be saying to Putin, listen, so far and no further may you go. But Trump is not a fan of NATO either.
Exactly. And that's partly why the diplomacy of all of this is difficult, because that would be one solution. If you know, Russia gets to keep the territory it holds, but NATO membership is extended to Ukraine. But as you say, President Trump is no fan of NATO in particular. He doesn't seem to be sympathetic to the idea of bringing Ukraine into NATO, which means that actually getting to the kind of deal which people are talking about is very difficult. And meanwhile, President Putin may think that he's still on a winning streak, as it were, that he could continue the war, gain more territory. Western support for Ukraine will decline further over time, and he could end up with a kind of maximum victory. So I think you're correct that all wars do end eventually, but it's not necessarily clear that this war will end anytime soon, I think.
Now, on a different matter, but also related to Russia, a Russian ship being spotted off Irish shores, scouting out our undersea cables. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, this isn't surprising. You know, we've known about the vulnerability of undersea cables for a few years. Russia seems to be upping its activity in this area. I mean, some people describe this as part of hybrid warfare. So Russia maybe doesn't want a full-on war with NATO or the West, but it's doing things like disinformation. There have been sabotage on various locations, and threatening these undersea cables is part of this hybrid warfare. And as we've seen in the last few days, the last week, the Irish Naval Service has effectively been monitoring this Russian vessel and then trying to escort it away from the area. I mean, the one thing we might add, obviously, is that this is a little bit of a sensitive issue for Ireland and for the in terms of Irish defence policy, because obviously it relates to questions of neutrality.
But the other unknowable probably is whether or not other undersea fleets are minding us, and we're not aware of it necessarily. I mean, there could be British, German submarines offshore just keeping an eye on those Russians.
I would think that's highly likely. And if you look at what's been reported over the last week or so, it appears that, you know, this Russian vessel has been monitored and followed by the Norwegians, the French, the British and the Irish. So I think one thing we can say is that, you know, this isn't an issue that Ireland can address on its own. And that's why there's more cooperation with the UK, but also other navies around these kinds of issues. NATO is setting up an undersea infrastructure security network, and there have been some reports that Ireland may be involved in this network as well.
Andrew, thank you very much for joining us. Andrew Cotty is the EU Jean Monnet Chair of European Political Integration in the Department of Government and Politics at University College Cork.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Today we have two very special guests on our program, introducing Lem and Lime.
Hello.
For Starry Lemon Lime Soda.
Thanks for having us.
What is Starry Lemon Lime Soda?
It's a crisp, clear burst of lemon lime flavor, and it's caffeine free.
Between us, one of you must be a little more important to Starry than the other. Who is it?
We're both important.
So we could just as easily be Starry Lime Lemon Soda.
No, that doesn't sound right.
Ooh, I like it.
So you saying hip-hop could be hop-hip?
Works for me.
Starry Lemon Lime Soda. Starry hits different.